Welcome to the Power Play Podcast, where international cricketer Kyron Powell and marketing genius Jordan Shannon join forces, bringing you captivating conversations with the biggest players in cricket and business. Join us as we dive into the lives of current stars in the cricketing world, the legends before them, and those extraordinary icons whose performances changed the game in both cricket and business. Exploring journeys both on and off the pitch, the boardroom, and everything in between. Get ready for an exhilarating blend of cricket, life, and business insights with two insatiably passionate, infuriatingly no-holds-barred hosts, who, unfortunately for the rest of us, live and breathe this stuff for a living.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 23 of the Power Play Podcast. I'm Jordan Shannon. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Kyron Powell. How are you, Kai?
I'm good, Jordan. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you very much. The UK is very, very, very wet at the minute. A lot of the league cricket near me has actually been pushed back a few weeks. It's that wet that we're not going to be playing any cricket. So, you know what? In the background of you there, it sort of slightly reminisces my front room at the minute here. I'm not too sure.
No, you're just seeing the window behind me.
Yeah, I can see a window.
Quite the opposite here. When I landed yesterday, obviously I had a bit of a nightmare getting back to the Caribbean. My driver took me sort of the wrong way to get to the airport, and what should have been a 50-minute journey ended up being like an hour and a half.
Oh no.
Ended up getting to the airport when my flight was just about to take off.
Oh no.
So we had to cancel the flights. Thankfully enough, Emma was able to cancel the flight and get me another flight from Heathrow. So then I had to take a train into London, then take another train out to Heathrow.
Oh no.
And then got a flight at 4:20 in the afternoon to Miami. So I had a pretty long, rough day on Sunday. And then overnight in Miami, coming into Trinidad yesterday afternoon. So it's been rough, but it's something like 32, feeling like 40 out here at the moment because of a heat wave. So,
oh, God.
Interesting.
And how's have you practiced much today?
No.
Nothing yet. I'll say it's still only decent. So what's the
plan? No, we don't practice on the day before games. So it's
right,
a complete off
day.
Yeah, which right. I think I needed anyway, basically, after all that sort of travel, because I was up quite early on Sunday, and obviously it was a late day. By the time I got to Miami, by the time I got to my room, it was like 3 a.m., so I've been going for 20 hours straight, so...
Yeah. And have you had a look at the track there at all? Is it looking okay?
The only thing I've seen is, like, they've sent through a picture in the team group chat probably like a week ago. That's the only thing about it. I'm going in blind tomorrow.
Well, as you said on the pod last week, Emma said that every time you go back home, you always score a ton. So you know what's expected this week.
Yep. Nothing less works. So.
Exactly, yeah. But I think, I know we worked it out last time that you are top of the tree, and I think that officially you are at the top of the table. So how's the confidence in the camp at the minute?
No, everyone was in good spirits. At 1 o'clock, we all went up to the front. Then we went down into town to get some food for lunch as a team. So we collected some food quickly at a restaurant and came back up. But everyone's relaxed. Everyone knows what's at stake and what needs to be done. We've got a team meeting this evening, obviously, to plan for Barbados. We've seen the Barbados team that they've selected for this match. So it's just... I guess final details being added. All the preparation is out the way now, and it's just time to execute and, I guess, figure out how we want to go about playing against each respective individual that Barbados has in their squad.
Yeah, definitely. And I think they've been a bit of a hit and miss side this campaign so far. And I think there's a big performance from them round the corner. Hopefully, obviously, in your situation, it's not over the next few days, really.
Yeah, I think they've lost obviously some of their key players as well, isn't it? Shane Dorich has retired, who's normally been someone that's been a sticking point for us over
his
career. He generally comes in and sort of, I guess, stops us slide. Obviously, Jason Holder has gone on to play county cricket for Worcester, I think, and Kimar Roach is also playing county cricket. So,
is it Surrey?
That's three of their most experienced players absent. Rawson's coming in for his first game of red ball cricket for quite some time.
That's
going to be interesting to see how he goes. But we know what we want to do, and that's the most important thing. We just focused on what we want to do and executing our plans for the course of 4 days. And you know, once we do that, more often than not, we're likely to. I mean, obviously, you're going to lose some sessions. You may even lose a day, but you're more likely than not to come out on top. So,
yeah, no, fantastic. Looking forward to seeing how that develops, and I'll be keeping an eye on that. I know we spoke quite previously in terms of the positives of having the academy featured in the 4 day tournament as well as the CCC. What's your take on the CCT and the CCC, and in terms of how, is there any areas of you think you could improve?
You know? I think what's happening with the CCC is quite interesting. Obviously, you look at the varying degrees of performances from the academy to CCC. Obviously, people are going to say both are new teams, and one is, I mean, faring a lot better in terms of the academy than the CCC is.
Yeah.
Mind you, people have to take into context that CCC has only been put together, I guess, before this four-day championship, maybe 2 to 3 weeks in advance. There's been sort of no real preparation or no camaraderie between them as individuals or the team, whereas the academy has been going for, I guess this is the second year of the academy being reinstated into regional cricket. Obviously, they tried them out last year first with the Headley Week series and then brought them into this. So they've been together for a much longer period. And so the performances and at least the consistency shows because they've been together for a longer period of time.
Yeah.
But for me, instead of the CCC, what I'd like to see is, I guess, the West Indies board sort of use that opportunity. And as I said, this is just for me, but I think
it'd be better
served if you sort of have maybe one or two bright shining lights from, let's say, a West Indies under 19, along with, let's say, some young, talented franchise guys from the various franchises that aren't necessarily selected into their country's 13-man squad at the moment, but in and around, so that they can still have the opportunity to play first-class cricket.
Right, okay.
Develop and get better. I think in a system like that, I mean, currently you have someone like a Shamar Brooks that's the captain of the CCC, and I think that he is the perfect person in a situation like this because of, obviously, not only his experience, but his temperament and his people skills. Like, he's an amazing people person.
Okay.
He's someone that everyone gravitates to. Like, he has a gravitational pull. Like, he's a really nice, genuine person that still commands respect. So I think someone like him as a leader, providing that seniority. What I'd like to see with them as well is, I guess, for more budding coaches as well to have an opportunity there. So, I mean, someone like Pedro Collins, who's the assistant coach, I'd love to see him as a head coach and see how he fares. I'd love to see someone like Leon Johnson from Guyana that just retired. Working alongside, as I said, this would be young players that aren't in their franchise teams yet and, you know, talented under-19 players. I'd like to see someone like him that's captained Guyana for a long period of time and had great success, sort of getting into coaching, whether it is that he's interested or not, I don't know, but I'm just saying, you know, something that I'd like to see, and, you know, the type of personnel that I'd like to see involved in that system. I think that would be a great avenue to sort of provide a feeder system as opposed to the colleges and campuses, because I don't know that they necessarily have, I guess, the prerequisite talent necessary for this level of cricket. Whereas I think you have ready-made options more available to you, where you can sort of get better short-term and long-term results that would be, I guess, more beneficial. Mind you, having said that, there have been, I guess, one or two guys that have stood out in the CCC setup. You've got the leg spinner, Zeeshan Mattara, I think his name is. But again, he is someone of that under 19 ilky, 17, and he's a part of the camp for the West Indies under 19 team that eventually went to the World Cup in South Africa.
Yeah.
So I guess that fits into what I was saying before. And then you've got this guy, this left arm seamer, Jedaiah Blades, who's had a relatively okay season thus far, someone that we wouldn't have seen if this opportunity hadn't come about. So, I mean, I just think for mine, that's how I'd like to see that system being set up and being utilized, because I think it'd be, I mean, imagine you have a senior player like a Shamar Brooks. Again, someone that I think that should still be in and around the West Indies team, but obviously isn't at the moment. I don't know if it stands there, but like people like a Shannon Gabriel, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, Brooks obviously being a senior batter, someone like a Shannon Gabriel being a senior bowler.
For the bowling side of things, yeah.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when Shannon is fit, I think he's absolutely one of the, like, one of the hardest cricketers I've played with, because, like, he gives absolutely everything, whether he's 100% fit or not. Once he goes into that field, he gives you everything. And, like, to show those young, up-and-coming players, I guess his level of discipline in terms of his work ethic and stuff, you know, I know people don't probably think that, but like his work ethic and his discipline towards his game is something that would be a good eye opener for young cricketers coming in to see how he worked to get to that level. So yeah. I think,
mentality as well.
Yeah. I think I'd love to see it go in that direction. Will they ever make a change like that? I don't know. But I think that would be very beneficial for the younger, talented groups of players that aren't in and around their franchise 13-man squad, but are in and around the franchise setup, and the young under-19 players with, you know, exceptional talent that don't get into the West Indies Academy. There's still another avenue
to go in.
Yeah.
So do you think then that there's a way where the countries can then speak to the CCC and obviously say, look, just to let you know, there's two or three lads here that probably not going to make squad, but we believe them to be of something down the line. We want them to, we know it's going to be advantageous for us for them to continue some experience. Or how would you then know, how would you then, is it down to the countries to then to speak to the CCC or to push them players into the CCC, or is it down to, basically in a nutshell, how do you open it up then if they're not just going to be picking within the CCC as such?
I don't know. I think it would have to be something that probably Cricket West Indies orchestrates.
Right.
Because I don't know currently. I mean, before this season, I know CCC had sent out something where they had, like, if you're interested in playing for the CCC,
right,
contact whoever on this email address, and they had lots of people got contacted, etc. But let's say, for example, you had 200 people get in contact. Obviously, you can't sort of work out 200 people to see if you want all or 50% of these people to become available to you. Because then what's happened now is you've had sort of a situation where predominantly most of the players have come from Barbados. And then even in the West Indies Academy, you've got a high representation of Asians as well. So it sort of makes it difficult for other Caribbean territories to have a fair shot, because I remember there was a match, or a round of matches, sorry, early in the season, where there was something like 28 players from Barbados playing in that round of matches. And that sort of works out to be, let's say, 24, just over 24.5% of the players in that round of matches being from from one territory. So that, I mean, let's just round it up to 25. One in every four players that played in that round of matches were from Barbados, which shouldn't be the case when you're talking about a CCC and a West Indies Academy. It should be more of an even split across the board, giving other teams and players an opportunity to go and showcase their skills as well.
Yeah. It seems as though, again, we've spoken about it so many times before, but it's like this communication aspect again, where there's some needs to be communication across, like I said, the territories to be able to try and push them into this, either the CCC or the academy, if that's where the academy want to pick from a skill that they don't feel like. For instance, on your side of things, although Jewel is in your squad, so he's, you know, it's okay. If he wasn't to be in, you've got a player who's, I suppose he's a bad example, really, because he probably would be in the academy set up anyway. But say, for instance, hypothetically, he wasn't, then you've got a very good player with high potential just off the back of an under-19 World Cup that potentially then might not be featuring in any four-day stuff because he just wouldn't make the squad, for instance.
Yeah, that should sort of be, I guess, the role. But, I mean, as I said, I think it's something that Cricket West Indies, because it's still early days in terms of CCC and the academy being involved in the regional matches. Yeah. It's something that used to happen, let's say, maybe 10 years ago, but then they stopped it. So there's still room to sort of tweak and maneuver with what they've re-implemented now until they get to a sort of a sweet point where, you know, it's meeting the needs of, I guess, a wider diaspora of personnel as opposed to servicing what seems to be a limited range of people at the moment.
I don't think it probably helps the favouritism between the countries as well, because like you were saying there, from the perspective of like 25% being from Barbados, it sort of makes it, you know, it's not, I won't say it upsets the other as other people, but it, I suppose it does in a way where this obviously seems to be that favouritism towards Barbados rather than the other nations as well, really.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it looks that way, and it's, I mean, it would be hard pressed for anyone not to think that way when one in every four, which is quite a significant number when you're talking about teams vying for spots on an international vying for spots on an international team, and your opportunities are that much less based on, I guess, where you're from in that aspect. So it's not great.
But like I said, I suppose with you saying it there, then there is going to be, you know, it has only been something that's quite recent, so things will hopefully might change over the next couple of years, or even short, you know, in a shorter scale, where it can work out and advantage the West Indies as a whole, because ultimately that's what, you know, it's there for, with the academy and the CCC, is to help bring on the, you know, the talent that's on, you know, that's within the Caribbean at the minute. And that's the idea, you know, hopefully. So they have to tweak stuff and change it and adapt it to make it work. Then hopefully the powers that be will do that, and it advantages the West Indies overall.
100%. No, that, and again, as I said, I just hope that they look into that, because it's something that, you know, at the very least needs to be, I guess, leveled out more. There needs to be more of an even playing field then.
Has there been anything said in terms of whether they'll be doing the tri-series again this year or not?
I'm not sure. They had some press release or something, that some media release that went out yesterday, and there's like a 2-hour long, I guess, video that's on YouTube now on Windy's Cricket, but I was only able to consume 2 hours of it and 2 minutes of it, sorry. Then I had other things to do, so I'm not sure. I know that they've signed a new MOU and they're having plans to, I guess, implement lots of different things by what I've heard in terms of the conversations on the team bus. Right. That'd be things like Caribbean T20 coming back in.
Right,
being a feeder system for the CPL, which I don't think should have ever been erased because then it's hard to identify talent in the various regions without a feeder system. And you're sort of going on, I guess, word of mouth and someone knowing someone through being a friend or connection.
Yeah.
As opposed to having a feeder system and giving players the opportunity to perform. So
things like that
would be a great addition to or re-addition to West Indies cricket. And as I continually say, I think just more cricket. You know, I think there's quite a shortage of cricket because as a region, we're blessed to have over 330 days a year of sunshine and good weather. And so we need to maximize on that as much as possible. I think that the first class season, I think that the professional cricketing season is just too short. I think that we need to be playing at least two rounds of first class games, everyone playing everyone home and away. Which would give you 14 games. And I think that you could do sort of the same for the 50 over competition with the top four teams going into a semi-finals type situation, along with a Caribbean T20 leading into a CPL. And then you can say you have at least 6-7 months of cricket out of the year, and then you can actually be deemed as professional cricketers. Whereas right now, I think, you know, we're playing probably something like, excluding CPL, it's something like, let's say 2 months of cricket. Well, no, the quarter season has been expanded. So let's say 10 weeks of cricket in the year. Two and a half months, which it's an absolute it's tragic, you know, because you've got, as I said, in April, early April, it's 32 degrees.
Yeah.
There's no reason why we shouldn't be capitalizing on this and playing more cricket.
No. And I think that this is like the infrastructure that we spoke about again before when, you know, the big, well, it was, you know, such a shame not to see the West Indies feature in the 50 over World Cup that just went. And then, like we spoke about before, in terms of, you know, the West Indies tour in England and the potential to obviously make a bit of a sort of make a big statement really by, you know, not only competing with England, but potentially winning a few test matches over here. The infrastructure that takes is got to be in place here, because potentially like the 4 day stuff would finish, and then the next time some of these lads would play in a red ball would be the first day at Lords, for instance. Other than if there was something in place, you know, from a warm up perspective, and if you was to stretch that season, you know, over a longer period, and you play a high volume of games, like you said, you have the opportunity to, you know, that you're naturally going to lose certain players as well because of the franchise tournaments that take place, you know, 365 of the year. So then you give more opportunity to certain players on the fringes, which then also potentially answers the questions which you were saying about the CCC and the academy. It might not necessarily be needed because some of these players are also featuring because you play more games. You know, with that comes injuries, so people naturally miss games. Then you've got, you know, the rotation aspect side of things and managing it a bit more. So you therefore require a greater squad, and ultimately people play more cricket, which will then obviously be a matter of advantage overall anyway.
Exactly. And as you mentioned previously, down to infrastructure, that's something that we really need to, look at in the Caribbean. It's long past the time where you could just call any one of your friends to come and bowl to you in the streets and that sort of stuff. Like cricket has advanced leaps and bounds, and we need to have a lot more facilities available to Caribbean players, whether it be indoor nets, bowling machines, access to high standards of coaching, availability of these coaches on an ongoing basis, not just for, let's say, a week period or a 2 hour period a day where you can do a session. You know, you need to be able to go in and have a net pretty much at any point in time of the working day, as well as, you know, obviously better training methods, better understanding of fitness and professionalism, better understanding of what to eat, how to handle social media,
all
these various aspects of being a professional in today's ecosystem, because the world has changed and the world continues to change at a rapid pace.
Yeah.
And so if we're not equipping not just our players, but the entire organization from top to bottom, whether that be very top being players at the international level, president, board members, down to junior grassroots players, aspiring coaches, etc., then we're sort of fighting an uphill battle, as we'll never be able to catch up, and the gap will just continue to widen with more developed nations.
Yeah. No, definitely. Definitely. Well, appreciate, you know, your insights there and the way that you see it. And, you know, and you make some great points. And ultimately, both of us, you know, just want what's right and, what's right, but also like the best for West Indies cricket. But briefly moving on, obviously, the T20 World Cup is on the horizon. You know, it starts just after the IPL. And over the next few weeks, I think it'd be quite good for us both to sort of go through it, feature some of the teams, discuss some of the squads, who we see as being favourites. And, you know, also, I wouldn't mind touching base over the next few weeks as well in terms of seeing the developments of things that are happening in America in terms of getting some of the grounds ready and stuff. So, but I think it's a great starting point to sort of me and you to preliminary pick our 15-man squad for India in terms of who you think will feature. And I'll, you know, go through my 15, you go through your 15. I'm sure there might be a couple of debates along the way. So, yeah, let's get stuck in.
All right. So number one for me for Team India, obviously captain, opening batter, Rohit Sharma.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, excuse my phone here because I've got mine on the list here. Yeah, I've also gone with Rohit Sharma at the top of the order, which is pretty self-explanatory, to be honest with you.
Yep. So I think let's skip along to point two. For me, he has to open the batting in this current ecosystem of Indian T20 players.
You're going to say exactly what I'm going to say.
I don't see him batting in the middle of this team anymore. I think obviously there were issues around his strike rate, but I just think he's too great a player, too skilled a player, someone that performs at ICC tournaments at the highest standard, as we've just seen in the recent 50 over World Cup being the leader. And so I think Virat Kohli slots in to my second opening slot. And I think obviously they were having issues around his strike rate, whatever those may be. But I think for me, this gives him a chance to, I guess, bat through the innings. I mean, even if he goes at 140, we've seen that Rohit has had a drastic uptick in his strike rate in limited overs cricket and T20 cricket. And with all the other resources around in Indian cricket at this point in time, I think that he will be the perfect man to sort of see through an innings for India.
Right, well, you've gone exactly with me, and I didn't think you would do, to be fair. I thought you would have slipped, but I've gone with Kohli at the top of the order. But upon reflection, I also wouldn't be against him playing in the middle of the order, even at 3 or 4, because, again, I looked at this thing when I was reading about his strike rate and it being a concern. I actually don't think it's that much of a concern, because his strike rate, I'm sure, now, I'll either be 1 or 2 off the mark. I'm sure his strike rate at international T20s is 137. And I'm sure even like the likes of Shubham Gill and Sharma's is about 139, like you said, 140. So I don't think it's a massive ordeal, this whole hype around his strike rate. And I know that it came off the ball. Some of the recent press has come off the back of him scoring that 100. And then obviously Josh Butler getting the 100 chasing, but it being off like 12 balls less and it being, you know. But for me, I think that whether he opens or whether he bats three, I'm not against it, to be honest. But either way, he's in the 15-man squad regardless.
I've gone with Surya Kumar Yadav at number 3.
Right, okay.
I think that his quality, his skill, he makes centuries in international T20 cricket look as though it's a 50 over game. Like, he's got so much more time than everyone else, and I want to have my best players facing the most balls available. And I think those three guys have to be in the bulk of the batting for India. So I've gone with him at three.
Right. Well, if it's not going to, my other one in that three opening position would be Jaiswal for me. I'm gonna go with him again. I think that he doesn't need to say any more, really, in my opinion. But I think whether he opens with Rohit or whether he bats at three, I'm okay with that, because your pick there with Yadav, I'm happy to him to come a little bit later down the order.
Fair enough. I've gone four. I've gone KL Rahul / right. Shubman Gill.
Right, okay. Now, your slash, does it depend on whether he keeps wicket or not?
No, because my next pick is my wicket keeper. I just think it depends on KL Rahul's form and recovery and stuff.
Yeah.
I think right now obviously he's coming back into it. He's a bit sluggish in terms of his stroke rate, etc. But we've seen in that 50 over World Cup, the value that he brought to India's team, obviously with the addition of responsibility having to be wicket keeper with Rishabh Pant being injured at that point in time. But yeah. I just think it depends on how quickly he gets back up and running, and if not, then I'll go Shubman Gill at number four.
Right. Well, you make a good point there. I think one of the biggest benefits of this situation here with the IPL is that the India 15 are all going to be peak in realistically because of the volume of cricket they're playing ahead of the World Cup. So they're going to be picking their 15 on, you know, they're going to pick it on form realistically. And as we go down, you know, there's going to be question marks over that. So my order's a bit messed up, really, but my next man on the list is Shubman Gill. So he comes in for me. So that will potentially be number five, but whether he would bat five, I don't know yet, because I need to dissect and go through with my coaching staff and pick the 11.
Fair enough. I think at number five, I'm obviously waiting for him to get through the tournament.
Right.
He's had a great start thus far, but if he's fit, he definitely plays for me, and that's Rishabh Pant.
Yeah, same. He's my key. Well, at the minute, you know, it looks like he's going to get through it okay. You know, he's batting number four for DC at the minute. I think these games will do him the world of good, and he'll be ready to go. And, you know, he's going to want to light up the World Cup, absolutely no doubt. No doubt at all. So, yeah.
I mean, before he got injured, he was just coming into his own in international cricket and absolutely destroying test match cricket in particular.
Yeah.
And I think he was potentially looking to, you know, transition into one day cricket and stuff. But that unfortunate accident happened. So
yeah.
Just happy to see him back playing cricket first and foremost. And, you know, to see that he's happy and healthy. And, you know, it's a good thing, not just for Indian cricket, but for international cricket.
Yeah, definitely. Totally agree with you.
Who've you got at number six?
Pandya. Hardik. Again, I think from the injury side of things, again, be interested to see how he goes in the IPL. But again, it's perfect how it's going to work out, because they'll manage his workload and make sure that he's, you know, ready to go. But, you know, you can't leave him out, to be honest with you.
Yeah. He has to be able to bowl for me. Obviously, his batting is his batting, but I need him to be able to bowl and contribute with the ball. That will give me a few more options in terms of balance and structure of my team.
Yeah.
But he has been bowling. I don't necessarily need him to bowl four overs, but I do. I mean, it may be a situation where he has to, but I need him to be able to bowl at least two overs on a match for me to be able to select him into my team.
Yeah, I get that completely. Have you got another all-rounder in at seven?
Say the name.
Jadeja.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's another one that, as long as he's fit, he plays.
Yeah.
I think that he brings a lot of balance to the team, because he's someone that you can push up the order to disrupt the amount of right-handers in the top order.
Yeah, definitely.
He can be a genuine batter. He's a genuine bowler. Fielder, triple threat cricketer. And he's someone that India should never leave the country, though.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And the fact that, like, you mentioned that, I don't think I wouldn't even flinch at bowling in times in the power play as well. I think he's got that, you know, he's got that range and variation and stuff. So, an absolute no-brainer. So, we're at seven. So, I've got 8, 9, 10. Yeah. So, are you picking another spinner?
Yep. I've got two more spinners in my 11 still. So, I am going with Kuldeep at number 8.
Same.
I think that since he's increased the pace that he's bowling at, he's become extremely difficult to play. And you've seen in terms of his, I mean, he was already a successful bowler, but his success has like increased twofold from since he started bowling a lot quicker, because then it makes it a lot more difficult to read him off the pitch. Lots of guys don't seem to read him out the hand.
Yeah.
And his batting as well has improved. He's putting a lot of time on his batting. And I think, you know, the left arm Chinaman spin bowler is an asset to have, especially on these pitches in the Caribbean in particular. I know that most of India's games are in America, and on untested pitches, you can probably bet your bottom dollar that spin will come into the equation as well. So
yeah,
I'm definitely going with Kuldeep on that.
Yeah, definitely. So 3 remaining. Is that right? 8? Yeah.
Yep.
Are you going with 3 pace? Or are you throwing another spinner in?
Let's see your number 9.
Well, my number 9 would be Bumrah.
Right. Interesting.
Well,
that means,
I think so, yeah. I'll just throw my three quicks in.
All right.
So I've got Bumrah, Mohammad Siraj, and then our deep sheep Singh. So I've got my left armor in there. I want my left armor in, definitely. So, but then I'm also thinking that I wouldn't mind another spin option potentially. So I'm also taking Ravi Bishnoi with me as well.
Ravi Bishnoi. Interesting.
Yeah, he's coming with me.
Right, so my 3 would be Yuzvendra Chahal at number 9 instead of Ravi Bishnoi. And I went for 3 spinners, obviously one being a left-arm Chinaman.
Yeah.
Obviously, Chahal being a right-arm leg spinner.
Yeah.
And then I've got Jadeja left-arm spin as well. I think, obviously, in terms of control, Jadeja provides that being a finger spinner.
Yeah.
And then the 2 wrist spinners giving me options, spinning the ball in and out any type of batsman. So I think that's important to have, and both of them have great control as well. At number 10, I've gone for Mohammad Siraj.
Yeah.
And I've done that primarily on the basis that Mohammad Shami is out injured.
Yeah.
And he would have been my first choice in this squad, but obviously he's unavailable due to his injury. So I think in terms of a backup, Siraj is the guy that's, I guess, in favour and experienced enough to go and start an international tournament for you.
Yeah.
And obviously my number 11 goes without saying, Jasprit Bumrah needs no introduction. Sort of like the 2 opening batters in our team. And I think with that team, I sort of cover as many bases as I need to, as I have 3 seam bowling options and 3 spin bowling options. And that's why I said that I need Hardik to be bowling for me to select him into my team, or else it throws off the composition of my team. Because Hardik and Jadeja are genuine all-rounders in this team for me, and both of them need to be able
to do both.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, definitely. And that's where, like, my other names I wanted to, because I want a left arm over in there. I'll say left arm over, but a left armer in there. And that's where I think that the Arshdeep Singh comes into it. But also, Mohsin Khan, he's been, obviously, he's quite talked about so far in the IPL, and he's quite highly fancied from that side of things. So I wouldn't. This is why I think it's a massive advantage that they're going to be playing. So you're going to be picking this side based on the form side of things. So, you know, yeah, I think we've got a great, I think either of us have both picked solid 11s there. And I think but I think overall, when they take this 15-man squad, there's going to be some, you know, players there might be one or two, actually, to be totally honest with you, who might not have featured a lot in international cricket, but will be coming in off the back of a red hot tournament as well, to be fair.
Yeah, for me, I mean, obviously, remember, I sort of had that Shubman / Rahul. So I'm already up to 12. So my other three would sort of be, I'd go for an off spinner and I'd be looking at the IPL closely.
Yeah.
Ravi Chandran Ashwin would be the leader at the moment, just for the sheer amount of experience that he has.
Yeah.
I'll be looking at him and someone like a Washington Sundar, who's been in and around the Indian setup for quite a bit of time now. Obviously, he's been plagued with injuries. But if he can get through the IPL, then, you know, those would be sort of my off-spinning options. I've already got a spare batter as well in either Shubman or KL Rahul.
KL Rahul, and you've also got your potential backup keeper as well, man.
I've already got a backup keeper in my squad as well, either KL Rahul or Rishabh Pant. And so I'll be looking for another seamer. And I'll be quite interested to have a look at this young guy from Lucknow, who's, is it Yadav that's bowling the speed of light? The new guy that's come in for Lucknow Super Giants and been bowling 150 plus.
Right, okay.
I'll be interested to have a look at him. I don't think that they'll sort of rush someone like that into the tournament. And so I'll probably go for a left arm seamer in, is it Arshdeep Singh?
Arshdeep Singh,
I'll look at him as another option, as he said, to take a left armer to the tournament with me, and then I'll look at maybe a Yashasvi Jaiswal as well, to round up 15.
Well, I think you picked it superbly. Nice balance as always.
I think we've basically got,
I think, about 13 of the same 15.
Yeah. And I think the Indian team, once everyone's fit and healthy, pretty much the squad pretty much picks itself, which is a crazy thing to say with a country of 1.5 billion. But, you know, these guys have performed well for an extended period of time now, and they deserve the opportunity. Obviously, India wants to go on and win a major title. They haven't done that for some time.
No,
I think their last major championship was it 2015, that 50 over World Cup? Have they won anything since that? Champions Trophy or anything? Am I missing something?
Did they win something in 2017? Why have I got something in my head for 2017?
Is that a Champions Trophy that they've won in 2017? Or T20 World Cup? They haven't won T20 World Cup from since Dhoni, is it?
No. So it might be then. So, yeah.
Yeah. So.
It's overdue. And
yeah.
And arguably, you know, rightly, they are going to go into the tournament. Oh, will they go into? Yeah, they'll go into the tournament's favourites, I assume, as it stands.
I don't know. I mean, they're always in the top percentile of teams going into the tournament. But I fancy Australia. I think that they're just playing this such good tournament, such a good tournament play team.
Team, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think India would sort of be my number two, with New Zealand always as my dark horse.
Yeah, and you can't not. I think that
I think if the West Indies could get sort of the right bowling combination, because what we saw on that last T20 trip to Australia, that last T20 series, they lost the series 2-1, but in every single game, they made over 200 runs. So,
yes,
I mean, coming back home and understanding our conditions a lot better than the oppositions that we're going to be playing against, once we can get our bowling combinations right, I think that we should be in with the show.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that this is why I think that I'm really looking forward to the next few weeks and us going through each each team and picking this 15, because there's going to be times where the 11, you know, will pick itself, or not necessarily 11, maybe it might be the 9, and then all of a sudden you're having to try and maneuver too in terms of like not necessarily having the strength in depth and think strength in depth. So I'm looking forward to going through, you know, some of the nations and seeing how they all go. And some of the, you know, not only are, you know, the Indian team going to be prepped, there's a lot of lads who are going to be featuring in the World Cup who are playing in the IPL as well, though. So it's going to give us a decent light onto that, really, as well.
And it's interesting as well, because I mean, there's pretty much a major ICC tournament every year until 2031.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of trophies to be playing for. And I don't know what player, I guess, interest is going to be when it's that often now. You know, obviously a World Cup used to go every 4 years and that sort of stuff. But now it feels as though, you know, if I don't win it this year, I can win it next year sort of thing, almost like a Champions League.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out over time. But for now, I mean, you've got lots of great players coming towards the end of their careers and stuff and want to take away some sort of major trophy with them. So
yeah, definitely.
The interest levels are definitely high at this point in time, and it'd be good to see how guys sort of go about and how teams go about participating and structuring themselves throughout the course of a tournament, because tournament play is a lot different to bilateral series.
Yeah. Yeah. And also there's going to be an element of this tournament, of the unknown, you know, from the American side of things. Obviously people know what we're going to get from, you know, from wickets in the Caribbean, but also, you know, with these new wickets in America, nobody knows necessarily, you know, we've spoken about it before, but nobody knows how they're going to play, you know.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a big adjustment as well for the teams coming from America, coming into the Caribbean, because with wear and tear on these pitches. I mean, I know all the grounds in the Caribbean right now are undergoing renovations for the T20 World Cup.
Yeah.
And so the playing surfaces will be fresh when the World Cup starts, because cricket is being limited, if not absolutely stopped at all of these venues in preparation for the World Cup. But, I mean, because there are going to be so many matches, you've got 20 teams in the tournament, and I think rightfully so as well. I love to see tournaments like this where you have this amount of teams and like all the top teams get a chance
to
come up against each other. You know, it's a World Cup and everyone wants to have an opportunity. You look at FIFA and how they do it in the football world.
Yeah, yeah.
All the top ranked teams get in, you know. But as I said as well, the weather, it's scorching. And that's going to be in the middle of the summer. So I know the games are going to be played at night, but just the heat throughout the day and the impact that will have on, I guess, the lack of moisture in the pitches as well, which would be something to take into account. That will bring your spinners and your power hitters into play a lot more throughout this tournament.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Well, over the next few weeks, obviously, we'll have a nice opportunity to delve into that and break it down and stuff. But, you know, thanks you very much for tonight, today, and all the best for tomorrow.
Cheers, John. Great speaking again.
Speak to you soon.
Thank you for joining us on the Power Play podcast, hosted by Kyron Powell and Jordan Shannon. We hope you enjoyed this immersive dive into the world of cricket and business, exploring the unique experiences and perspectives of players past and present, alongside those invaluable insights into intriguing business themes that transcend beyond the boundaries of sporting heroics. Be sure to set your reminders on your Alexa or Google Home device, Or we won't tell anyone if you still use those paper calendar things from a bygone era. Join us next time for more inspiring dialogue with scintillating minds on the Power Play Podcast.